Good morning and welcome, everybody. In less than a week, we're going to start celebrating the fun and exciting holiday of Hanukkah. Literally less than a week from now, we'll be lighting our Hanukkah candles. So the question, of course, that we always have to ask whenever we have a holiday coming up is, what's the point of this holiday? What's the message? What are we supposed to be taking away from it? What are we supposed to be incorporating into our lives through the celebration of this holiday? And in fact, in some ways, the question is highlighted even more by a holiday such as Hanukkah, because Hanukkah is actually one of the only two that are not de'oraita. It's actually not straight from the Torah. Rather, it was Chazal who basically came and established the holiday. Both Purim and Hanukkah are the two drabbanans. And therefore, we have to ask, what did Chazal see in the events that transpired during the famous story of the Chashmonaim that made them feel that we have to have an entire holiday every single year that the entire Jewish nation celebrates in order to remember this specific event? Why did Chazal make this holiday? Interestingly, the Gemara itself explicitly asks this question, and it basically says exactly that. My Hanukkah, says the Gemara. Why do we have this holiday of Hanukkah? What's it all about? And the Gemara tells us the answer, so it seemed that this should be very simple. The Gemara asks and answers, you know, this question that we all have. The answer the Gemara gives is that it basically tells the story of the Nes Pach Shemen, the famous story of how the Chashmonaim, after successfully waging their military battle to chase the Greeks out of the Beit HaMikdash, they came and lo and behold, unfortunately, they could not find any pure oil to light the menorah except for just one tiny flask. But since that was all they had no choice, so they lit the menorah with that one small flask, and this amazing miracle happens, and that small little flask of oil remained lit for all 8 days, and that was this amazing miracle, and that, explicitly says the Gemara, is the reason that Chazal decided to establish this 8-day holiday of Hanukkah every single year for all time, for this famous miracle of the oil. And in fact, a second proof, besides for the fact that the Gemara just tells it to us straight out, that the reason for Hanukkah is this Nes Pach Shemen, this miracle of the oil, is that Hanukkah, even though it has many, many minhagim, we have latkes, we have dreidel, right, there's a lot of minhagim, however, Hanukkah has only one and only one mitzvah that's unique to Hanukkah and sort of characterizes the day. And of course, that mitzvah is the mitzvah of lighting the menorah every single night of the holiday. Clearly, lighting the menorah is a reenactment of this famous miracle of the oil that lasted for longer than it naturally should have. And therefore, for both things, both because the Gemara explicitly tells us that this Nes Pach Shemen, the miracle of the oil, is the reason that Chazal established the holiday, together with the fact that the one and only mitzvah that really characterizes the day is lighting the menorah, which reenacts that miracle, it seems pretty clear that that's the answer. Hanukkah is about this miracle of the oil lasting for longer than it naturally should have. However, it seems that we have to look deeper than just saying, Hanukkah is about this miracle of the oil. The reason for that is that if you really think about it, the miracle of the oil does not at all seem even close enough to being enough to justify the creation of a holiday. It doesn't seem all that significant for a number of reasons. First of all, if we really think about it, there have been a number of miracles throughout Jewish history that did not automatically just create an annual holiday every year. Like, to us, the occurrence of any miracle, we think, oh, of course we would want to have a national holiday every single year to remember a miracle, because for us, miracles never happen. So if even just one happens, even something like oil remaining lit longer, for us, we're like, yeah, that makes sense to have a holiday. But again, thinking about in the context of the time, that's not the case. Again, thinking about Jewish history, even, for example, there's this the famous battle of Yehoshua when he was waging the battle at Givon, and he says, Shemesh b'Givon Dom, and Yehoshua commands, or rather beseeches God, to let the sun stand still so that Am Yisrael could have a longer amount of time to defeat their enemies before it would get too dark to fight. And God accedes to this request. And God, in fact, lets the sun stand still so that B'nai Yisrael could continue fighting. Now, if you would ask me, which is a bigger miracle, the sun standing still or some oil staying lit for a little bit longer? I mean, hands down, I would say the sun standing still. Yet, this miracle of the sun standing still has become barely a blip in Jewish history. You have to actually, like, read, you know, the Navi cover to cover to, like, even find this miracle, whereas everybody knows about this miracle of the oil, because somehow this miracle of the oil became this 8-day gala festival every single year. Even though the sun's standing still, again, it's just sort of one of those stories hidden away, you know, in Navi. So, again, why did we suddenly pick this miracle to become the center of a holiday? That's the first point. Secondly, especially if you take into account the fact that this miracle of the oil took place in the Beit HaMikdash, it makes it even more surprising that we have an entire holiday to remember it. Because miracles in the Beit HaMikdash were literally commonplace. In fact, like one of the famous ones, but actually Pirkei Avot, Pirkei Mishneh, lists like 10 miracles that happened on a daily basis in the Beit HaMikdash. But one famous one, just to pick one, but again, there's 10 listed, and there's more even throughout the Gemara. But one even famous one is the fact that even when it was very crowded, when they were all standing there, miraculously, as we all know, especially they highlighted on Yom Kippur, the space would expand and there would be enough room for everyone to bow, even though when they were standing, it was all crowded. But again, there's many, many miracles that are told that happens, the Lechem Apanim staying fresh every week, right? There's many, many miracles that happened every single day in the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, again, it's just sort of like, why was this miracle of the oil even noteworthy? Why did they almost even like blink an eye about it? They were used to seeing miraculous things take place in the Beit HaMikdash. Thirdly, again, showing that it just seems to like not fully explain why we would have a whole holiday, is basically that all of the other holidays that we have are always highlighting and commemorating central events that forever altered the path of Jewish history. Right? Pesach, for example, right? Jewish history would never have been the same if there hadn't been the Exodus from Egypt. So too, Shavuos, right? What on earth would Judaism be if we hadn't gotten the Torah? It's very understandable why those events, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, of course we're going to have holidays. Those are literally the seminal events that create Judaism as it is. But then when you look in contrast, the miracle of the oil, like, how on earth did that in any way alter the path of Jewish history such that we should be remembering it every single year and celebrating for 8 days because of it? It would seem that if it didn't happen, okay, so they would have had to wait an extra week before resuming lighting the menorah. And in fact, the Gemara develops this idea that there's a concept which is called Tumah Hutra B'Tzibor, that impurity becomes permissible for the sake of the congregation, so that they would not have even had to wait an additional week before resuming lighting the menorah. They could have even lit right then and there with tamei oil, and so they just would have had to wait a week before having pure oil, but they wouldn't have even had to delay the lighting of the menorah. So again, taking all of this into account, the fact that there were more significant miracles, like the sun standing still, that occurred that did not create a holiday, the fact that in the Beit HaMikdash, especially miracles were commonplace, the fact that usually holidays are some like life-altering or rather history-altering moment, and yet this miracle of the oil doesn't seem that, again, it's just begging the question of why on earth did Chazal establish this holiday for the miracle of the oil? And then to just push it one step further, is that even if this miracle of the oil had been this amazingly momentous miracle, even that would still not have justified the creation of a holiday. Because Chazal only create holidays that in some way capture a message that we're supposed to be inculcating into ourselves. It's never just for the purpose of simply remembering that something once happened. There's always some message that we're supposed to be taking away from it. Otherwise, it's almost like, what's the point of the memory? There has to be some message that's embedded in the event that we're recalling. And so therefore, especially considering that it wasn't, or at least doesn't seem to have been all that momentous, we especially really have to ask, what is the message that's embedded in this miracle of the oil? It's got to be something big that would really justify and explain why Chazal made this whole 8-day holiday every single year for this miracle of the oil. So what is the eternal message of the Nes Pach Shemen that we're supposed to be taking away as we light our menorahs all the nights of Hanukkah? That's basically the question. To begin to answer that question, we really first have to take a step back and try to understand the larger theme of Hanukkah in general. Because what's fascinating is that if one actually looks through Jewish history, it turns out, and Menachem Liebtag has actually pointed this out, Hanukkah, or rather the end of Kislev, has been an auspicious time in Jewish history since long before the Hanukkah story ever happened. Amazingly, the first time that we actually see Chaf Hei Kislev playing a significant role in Jewish history is that the very first mikdash in history ever, namely the Mishkan, was actually completed on exactly the 25th day of Kislev. If you take a look, it's the first source in the source sheets. I brought for you from the Yalkut Shimoni, but there's a number of midrashim that bring down this concept, where it explicitly says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, in the part that's underlined, Bechaf Hei B'Kislev Nigmar Melechat HaMishkan. It was on the 25th day of Kislev that the Mishkan was completed. I mean, the coincidence is too much to just be a coincidence, that it was finished on exactly the same day as we now begin to celebrate Hanukkah. And what's interesting is that if you jump down then to the bottom of the underlined store and source number one, it basically says that even though it was completed at the end of Kislev, Hashem waited until Nisan to actually have the full celebration. And it says, "Umeatah hifsid Kislev shnigramo hamalacha." Since God sort of made Kislev lose out, so to speak, because really it was completed then, but the celebration was pushed off for a bit. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu alai l'shalem. God said, "I'm going to pay it back." Mashlim lo Kadosh Baruch Hu Chanukah Chashmonai. And somehow it's like this Chanukah that we celebrate is somehow repaying Kislev for the fact that the Mishkan was really completed on this day. But the point is that, again, the end of Kislev, even before the miracle of the Chashmonim happened, was already a significant day because this is when the Mishkan was completed. Amazingly, the Mishkan is not the only Mikdash that was completed at this time. If you look at source number 2, Chagai Perek Bet Pasuk Yichet, the foundation of Bayit Sheni, the initial foundation, was actually laid at exactly this time of year as well. If you take a look, the pasuk says, "Simu na levavchem," pay attention, "min hayom hazevamala," from this day on, "miyom esrim va'arba'a latishii," from the 24th day of the ninth month, which is Chaf Dalid Kislev, exactly one day before the day that we begin to celebrate Hanukkah, "lemin hayom asher yusad hechal Hashem," from the day when the foundation of the temple of God was laid. Again, way too much of a coincidence that we now have the Mishkan was completed on exactly the 25th of Kislev, and the initial foundation of Bayit Sheni was also laid at exactly this time of year, the 24th day of Kislev. Which means that when we then, years later, come to the Chanukat Chashmonai, to the celebration of Hanukkah, and the celebration that we always think of and the events that we think of, namely when Bayit Sheni was defiled by the Greeks, and then the Chashmonim come and defeat them and then rededicate Bayit Sheni, it suddenly puts it into an entirely different historical context. This is now the third dedication of a house for God that took place at exactly this time of year. And what emerges from that is that there are basically certain times of the year in the Jewish calendar that have certain kohot, certain power, so to speak, for certain things. Like, for example, we all know very well that Elul, through the beginning of Tishrei, is a time that's dedicated for tshuva. And of course, that doesn't mean you can't do tshuva some other time of year. Of course you can. But there is something about that specific time of Elul through the beginning of Tishrei that, like, that is the time when God is almost sitting there waiting for our tshuva and is almost like helping us along more than he is at other times of the year. What seems to be, from what we're seeing, that now we have the Mishkan was completed on exactly the 25th of Kislev. Bayit Sheni, the foundation was laid on the 24th of Kislev. And now the Chashmonim rededicated Bayit Sheni on exactly the 25th of Kislev again, shows that the end of Kislev clearly has this koach, so to speak, this power. It's a time that, for whatever reason, God has sort of set it aside as this is the time for, like, dedicating Mikdashot, so to speak. This is the time for building and consecrating physical structures that are going to be devoted toward Avodat Hashem. And therefore, what really seems to emerge from this is that Hanukkah is about way more than just that one-time victory of the Chashmonaim and their one-time purifying of Bayit Sheni, but is rather actually celebrating and highlighting the entire concept of Chanukat HaBayit LaHashem, of dedicating a house, so to speak, for God. That's really what Hanukkah is about. It's not just about recalling that one-time event by the Chashmonaim. It's way broader than that. It's about this entire concept that is going on at exactly this time of the year, every year, for focusing on that concept, that notion of dedicating a place for the service of God. And what's amazing is that once we recognize that that's really the broader, larger theme of Hanukkah, it's not just remembering that one-time event, it's this whole concept of dedicating a place for Avodat Hashem, we realize that Hanukkah is actually full of references to those other Chanukot HaBayit, not just the one-time event of the Chashmonaim. First of all, the entire name itself actually proves that that's really the theme of this holiday. Hanukkah literally means dedication. I think many of us often think of, there's a sort of cute explanation, that's actually even quoted by some of the Rishonim, that the reason for the name of Hanukkah is Chanu v'Chafhei, that they rested from battle on the 25th of Kislev. And again, that is a legitimate explanation, it is brought down by some of the Rishonim, but most of them focus on the fact that the pshat of the word Hanukkah, Chanukah, means a dedication. In fact, again, often when people move into new homes, they'll call it a Chanukat HaBayit, right? They're sort of like inaugurating their new house. And that's really the pshat of the name. And what's amazing is that many of the Rishonim, most Rishonim again, really focus on the pshat of the word as meaning dedication, that that's really what Hanukkah is about. However, they all disagree about which specific dedication is supposed to be highlighted in the name. Some say, the name Chanukah is because of the Chanukat HaMizbeach that took place when the Mishkan was completed way back when on the 25th of Kislev. Others say, no, it's because of the fact that Bayit Sheni was, the foundation was laid at this time. And then others, of course, say it's the Chanukat Hashmonai. But what I would suggest is that the fact that most of them agree that Chanukah means dedication, yet they all disagree about which specific dedication it's referring to, I would say that probably it's because it's not meant to be limited to just one specific dedication, not to just the Mishkan or just the foundation of Bayit Sheni or the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash by the Hashmonaim. But the holiday of Hanukkah is meant to transcend one specific dedication and is meant to encompass this entire broad theme of, in general, the concept of dedicating, you know, structures for the service of God. And that's why it's just broad, Chanukah, in general, dedication, the dedication of structures for Hashem, that incorporates all of the three that we've had historically, but again, can take into account others as well, and hopefully future ones as well. And what's interesting is, again, that if we even look at our celebration of Chanukah, we do a lot of things that actually recall some of these other dedications as well. For example, at the end of Shacharis, all 8 days of Hanukkah, we recite Tehillim Mizmor 30, which we normally say only right before Baruch Shamar. Throughout Hanukkah, we say also before Baruch Shamar, but in addition, we also repeat it at the end of Shacharis, which is Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LeDavid, again recalling the construction of Bayit Rishon. In addition, we do many things to recall the completion of the Mishkan. The Kriyas HaTorah, all 8 days of Hanukkah, is from the Karbanot that the Nisim brought when the Mishkan was completed. In addition, there's a very famous question posed by the Beis Halevi of why is Hanukkah 8 days? The first day wasn't a miracle, right? They had enough oil for one day. So really it should be a 7-day holiday because only the last 7 days were the miracle. The first day wasn't a miracle. There's many, many answers given to this, but one of the answers for why it is 8 days is because the celebration that inaugurated the completion of the Mishkan in the Torah was 8 days. There were the Sheva Yemei Miluim, the first 7 days where they took it apart and put it back together, and then the final climactic, Yom HaShmini, the 8th day, when the final sort of climax of the celebration of the Mishkan, and then it began to actually be used. So many explain the reason why we have 8 days to celebrate Hanukkah is because the 8 days are really recorded calling the 8-day celebration of the Mishkan. So we really see, oh, and actually, and one last thing that we also see from the Mishkan is that there's a debate about whether or not there's a notion of increasing meals during Hanukkah, because as we know, usually eating a lot is part of our celebration of Jewish holidays. However, it does not actually seem to be part of Hanukkah, and the Shulchan Aruch explicitly says that there is no notion of increasing meals specifically during Hanukkah. However, the Ramah, which I brought for you in source number 3, specifically says towards the end of the first line, Haggah, v'yesh omrim sheyesh k'tzat mitzvah b'ribui hasodot, that basically the Ramah says there are some who do say that there's a mitzvah to increase meals, mishum d'b'otan hayamim haya chanukat hamizbeach, not because of the chanukat hashmonai that we normally think of as that's what Hanukkah is about, no, because of the chanukat hamizbeach that took place when the Mishkan was completed. So that again, what we really see is that both in the name Hanukkah itself, as well as in many of our practices through the Kriyas Torah, through the fact that it's 8 days, through the increasing of meals, part of what we're doing in Hanukkah is, again, it's not just about that one celebration of the one-time thing that happened during the times of the Hashmonaim. It's really, in a very real, tangible, practical ways, we are celebrating all of the Chanukot that took place at this time, again, showing that the real theme of Hanukkah, it really transcends that one-time event of the Hashmonaim and really encompasses this broad concept of Chanukat HaBayit LaHashem in general. The question, though, back to how we started, is if that's the case, and that really is the theme of Hanukkah, is this notion of Chanukat HaBayit LaHashem, dedicating a house to God, then why do Chazal, when they ask the question in the Gemara, why do we have the holiday of Hanukkah, why do they answer this one-time limited miracle of the Nes Pach Shemen? And why is the only mitzvah that we have the lighting of the menorah? Why did, you know, both of those things seem to limit it, in fact, to just that one-time story? Why doesn't the Gemara or the mitzvah, why don't they seem to go broader than that? What's going on with this Nes Pach Shemen? Why is the Gemara focusing on that as the reason for Hanukkah? Which seems to really focus on the one-time event. What's going on with this Nes Pach Shemen and what's its significance? So to answer that, we have to really understand what the essence of a mikdash is. Since again, really it seems that the whole point of Hanukkah is this notion of dedicating mikdashot to Hashem. What is the essence of a mikdash? The essence of the Mikdash very clearly is the presence of the Shechina. That is what transforms what would otherwise just be stones and bricks into a Mikdash. Without the presence of the Shechina, it's just walls and a house and a roof. It's the Shechina that transforms it into a Makom Kedusha, into a place that is in fact a home of God. And what we see is that if we look in Tanakh, at every single time a Mikdash is constructed, the climax every time is, in fact, this amazing grand moment when the Shechina descends and transforms those sticks and stones into a Mikdash, into a place where the Shechina is. If you take a look at source number 4, at the conclusion of the construction of the Mishkan, it says in Vayikra Perek Tet, that basically Moshe and Aaron come to Ohel Moed, Vayitzu Vayivarchu et Ha'am, they go out, they bless the people, Vayar Chavod Hashem al Kol Ha'am, the glory of God comes and is seen by all the people, Vatetzei Eish Milifnei Hashem Vatochal HaMizbeach, a fire comes down from Hashem and eats upon the Mizbeach, and then it says, Vayar Kol Ha'am, Vayaron Vayiplo Paneim, the people are, they see it, they're joyous, they're shouting out in song, they fall on their faces. This was the amazing moment when they see that all of what they worked so hard for in building it has come to fruition, and in fact it now is a Mishkan, it now is a Mikdash. God has come to rest on the fruit of their hands. And in fact, similarly, in source number 5, upon the completion of building a Bayit Rishon, it has very similar description. And it says, Uchachalot Shlomo lihitpalel, when Shlomo finished davening, Va'esh yardame hashamayim, fire came down from the heavens, Va'tochal ha'olah v'hazvachim, it consumed the sacrifices, Uchvod Hashem maleit ha'mishkan, and the glory of God maleit ha'bayit, filled the house. And again, it then even continues in Pasuk Bet, the underlying part, Ki malei chavod et Hashem et beit Hashem. Again, it emphasizes again that the glory of God filled the house of God. And then in Gimel, V'chol b'nei Yisrael ro'im b'red et ha'ish u'chavod Hashem al ha'bayit. And all of b'nei Yisrael saw that the fire had come down, that the glory of God filled the house. And again, it then continues with how they bow down and they're bowing and they're thanking God and they're so joyous and they're so happy to see that again, all of their labor was not for nothing. God, in fact, is pleased with them. God has come down and transformed it into a Mikdash, His Shechina is present. What therefore glaringly stands out is that at the completion of the building of Bayit Sheni, there is no such description. If you look in Ezra, which is the 6th source that I brought for you, I brought it for you also in English because it's in Aramaic, so it's hard to understand. So we'll even just read it in English. Read the description and you will see this is the magnificent conclusion of the construction, and yet this piece is so glaringly missing. It just says, again, and this house was finished on the 3rd day of the month Adar, which was in the 6th year of the reign of Darius the king, and the children of Israel, the priests and the Levim, and the rest of the children of the captivity, kept the dedication of this house of God. I underline that only because in the Hebrew, if you notice, it says Chanukat Beit Elaha. Again, notice it uses that word Chanukah for the dedication. With joy, they offered at the dedication of this house of God 100 bullocks, 200 rams, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and for a sin offering for all Israel, 12 he-goats according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they set the priests in their divisions and Levim in their courses for the service of God, which is at Jerusalem, as it is written in the book of Moshe. And after that, it continues on with a totally new topic. This was it. This was supposed to be the glorious dedication, and yet it is so glaring, especially when read in contrast to the completion of the Mishkan, the completion of Bayit Rishon, there was no descent of the Shechina. And in fact, if you then continue on to source number 7, the Gemara in Masechet Yoma explicitly says, and it's actually a very famous idea about Bayit Sheni, which most actually attribute to the fact that the majority of the Jews did not go up. Even once permission was granted to the Jews after Gullus, that they can now go and return to Eretz Yisrael and build Bayit Sheni, most of them chose to remain in Gullus. And that's the reason that most give for why this happened. But if you look at the Gemara, it says, Elu chamisha devarim shayu bein mikdash rishon lemikdash sheni. These are the 5 things that distinguish the first Beis HaMikdash from the second. Meaning, there were 5 critical elements that were present in the first Beis HaMikdash that were absent from the second. And if you look, one of the ones that is listed, I underlined it, is the Shechina. The Gemara explicitly tells us that the Shechina was present in the first Beis HaMikdash and was missing from the second. Which, again, is a very powerful thing about like what it says about the second Beis HaMikdash. However, at least to relieve us a little bit, the Shechina does seem to have been present there a little bit. Again, if not, then can we even call it a Beis HaMikdash? Is it even a Beis HaMikdash if there's no Shechina at all? However, there does seem to have been a Shechina a little bit, although again, it's very, very clear that it was always to a lesser degree than ever existed in Bayit Rishon. It's very clear that Bayit Sheni really never lived up to the grandeur or the Kedusha of the first one. However, as I said, it was there a little bit. And the way that we know that it was at least there a little bit is that the Gemara explicitly tells us in Masechet Shabbos, this is actually source number 8, that in addition to the like amazing moment when the Shekhinah descended, there was a daily ongoing miracle that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash that was proof to the fact that the Shekhinah was there. And that's what it says in source number 8. It says, Ela edut hi laba'ei olam sheshchinah sherabbi Yisrael. The menorah, it actually had just mentioned previously, that was the context they're talking about the menorah, was a testimony to anyone, and to everyone, that the Shekhinah was residing in Israel. My edut, what about the menorah exactly constituted this testimony? Amar Rav said, Rav, zu nerma ravi. It was the westernmost lamp. Shenotein ba shemin kemidat chavroteha. That they gave it oil, the exact same amount as all the other branches had. From it they would light, and with it they would conclude. That basically the fact that the Ner Maravi received the exact same amount of oil as all the other branches, yet remained lit on a daily basis, every day this happened, that it received the same amount of oil, yet remained lit for longer than any of the others, that miracle of the Ner Maravi on the menorah was the sign, says the Gemara, that the Shekhinah was present in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara explicitly tells us that this miracle occurred in Bayit Sheni as well, showing that, again, it's very clear that Bayit Sheni never lived up to its potential and did not live up to the holiness or the grandeur of the first one, but at least it did have the Shekhinah present to at least some degree because this miracle of the Ner Maravi did occur, showing that the Shekhinah was there. However, the situation got much worse in the years leading up to the Hanukkah story. Because as we know, in contrast to some of the other times when the Jews were in danger, part of the Hanukkah story is that it was not just about our enemies trying to destroy us. We were part of the problem. What do I mean by that? All of the assimilation that was going on, it wasn't just about Antiochus saying that you're not allowed and forbidding us from keeping missiles. That obviously was part of it also, but some of it was us voluntarily choosing not to keep Torah and missiles anymore and choosing to, in fact, take on the Greek ways and Hellenize and again, become sort of decide voluntarily to give up their Judaism. And therefore, what we actually end up seeing, if you take a look at source number 9, is that it explicitly says that Arba'im Shanasha Shimei Shimon HaTzadik, that for the 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol, it basically is saying how a lot of the miracles that occurred during the Beis HaMikdash stopped happening. And one of the ones that it says is, Vayaner Maravi Dolek, up until that time, the Ner Maravi, this westernmost lamp, was always lit, again, as a sign that the Shekhinah was there. Mikan Ve'elach, from his time on, Pa'amim Dolek, Pa'amim Chaba. Sometimes it would be lit, but sometimes it would go out. Meaning, at the time, from the time of Shimon HaTzadik, even that sign of the Shekhinah, the Ner Maravi remaining lit, would sometimes go out, showing that the Shekhinah was entirely absent from Bayit Sheni. And what's amazing is that you would ask, okay, so when was Shimon HaTzadik? Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol exactly at the time that Alexander the Great came to Eretz Yisrael. And the way that we know that is that there's a very famous story in the Gemara of this dramatic meeting between the two, that when Alexander the Great first came for the first time to Eretz Yisrael, the Jews were terrified because it was pretty clear that he was coming to wreak havoc, not to make peace. But what happens is, so he's coming to Yerushalayim, and the Kohen Gadol, who is Shimon HaTzadik, it explicitly says his name in the Gemara, went out wearing the big day lavan that was normally reserved for just during the times of Yom Kippur. So he goes out wearing the begadim from Yom Kippur to greet Alexander the Great, and when Alexander the Great saw him, he got off of his horse, and bowed down to him. And everyone was flabbergasted. What on earth is going on? And Alexander explained to them that every night before he would go out and be victorious in battle, he would have a dream of someone who looked exactly like Shimon HaTzadik, who would instruct him what battle strategies to use, and therefore he can't believe that now he's seeing him in the flesh, and that's why he had bowed down to him and agreed not to, in fact, destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And the interesting, by the way, conclusion of the story is that Alexander, though, wanted to put a statue of himself in the Beis HaMikdash, and Shimon HaTzadik got him to agree not to do that if instead all Jewish babies born that year would be named Alexander. And interestingly, in fact, we do know that there are many Jews named Alexander, and it seems to hark back, actually, to that story. The point, though, for us is the fact that Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol at exactly the time that Greek influence and Hellenism was introduced to the Jewish people. In other words, at exactly that time that, again, to begin with Bayit Sheni was never on the level of Bayit Rishon, and God was never as happy with the Jews at that time, again, largely it seems, because some of them just seemed so dispassionate that they couldn't even go. Like, most of them even chose to stay in Galus. So to begin with, it was never on the same level. But now, in the years leading up to the Hanukkah story, not only was it on a lesser level, but because of the assimilation that was going on at the times, says the Gemara, "Vayah ner marvi dolek mikan ve'elach pamim dolek pamim chaba." Even the miracle of the ner maravi stopped happening. That again, said the Gemara, that was the sign that the Shekhinah was there. It really seems that to begin with, it was on a lesser level, and in these years leading up to the Hanukkah story, as a result of the Greek influence and the Hellenism and the assimilation, that it literally left altogether, and that there were times where the Shekhinah was entirely absent from the Beis HaMikdash. With this background, we can now finally appreciate the unbelievable significance and import of the Nes Pach Shemen. Because, think about what happened. We first have to even appreciate what the Hashmonaim did. It wasn't just that they fought. It was that given the context of their times, where A, it was forbidden under threat of death to keep Torah and mitzvot. But more than that, the sort of culture of the time seemed to be that the Jews were more than happy to give up Torah and mitzvot. The Hashmonaim stood up and said, we refuse to live a life that is devoid of Torah and mitzvot. We don't care if it even means risking our own lives. This is worth it. Life is not worth living, they were essentially saying, if we cannot live our lives as full-fledged Jews. And therefore, essentially, again, their battle cry was, Mil Hashem Eli, who for God, come to me, we are going to take a stand, we are going to fight, we refuse to go on, A, watching our brethren give into this and assimilate, and letting Antiochus force us to assimilate. It's time to stand up and take a stand and say, this matters to us. This is worth everything. This is even worth risking our lives. And therefore, basically, again, they, you know, developed an army. They went to the hills. They fought. And again, as we say every time in Al Hanisim, Rabbi Mat, you know, Matim, they were so few. And yet they fought valiantly. And therefore, they were successful, miraculously, amazingly, in defeating the mighty Greek army. But again, that was only the first step of the process. They then had to go and clean out all the Avodah Zarah and all the impurity that had totally defiled the Beis HaMikdash. So again, step one was even having that strength and that courage and that passion and the commitment to say, this is worth risking my life and fighting. But again, that only led to step two of then having to clean the Beis HaMikdash. And even after they have done this, even after they risked their lives and fought this battle, and even after they painstakingly had to go through and clean out the Beis HaMikdash, even so, they still did not know if God was going to be pleased with them. They still did not know if God was going to say, you've earned it, I'm going to come back. So of course, even after all of what they've done, risking their lives and fighting and cleaning the Beis HaMikdash, everything that they've worked so hard for is waiting and hinging on there being some sign from God that he has in fact accepted all of what they've done, and that in fact he's coming back to the Beis HaMikdash. And now we can appreciate that sign was the Nes Pach Shemen. That's why the Nes Pach Shemen was so important. That Nes Pach Shemen was the sign that after all of what they've done, God in fact has accepted it and is in fact moving back to the Beis HaMikdash. Why was that so clearly the sign? Because the parallel between the Nes Pach Shemen and their Namaravi is so striking. They're essentially the identical thing. In both cases, it's a little bit of oil miraculously remaining lit for much longer than it naturally should have. And again, the Gemara has explicitly told us that that was the significance of the Ner Maravi. The Ner Maravi, that oil in the westernmost lamp, was the daily sign in the Beis HaMikdash that the Shekhinah was Shor Rabbi Yisrael, that the Shekhinah was present in the Beis HaMikdash. Again, in the years leading up to the miracle of the Hashmonaim, it stopped happening, showing that the Shekhinah was not there. Suddenly, after them fighting the battle, after cleaning the Beis HaMikdash, this amazing miracle, not even of just the Ner Maravi, but of all seven branches of the menorah, remaining lit for not just one extra day, for 8 days, remaining lit, was so clearly this grand sign from God that he has in fact accepted all of their handiwork. He has accepted it. He is happy with them once again. And he is, in fact, returning to the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, I would even argue that the fact that he did not, again, theoretically, we could say, why didn't Hashem just make the Ner Maravi start happening again? Why didn't he just make that westernmost lamp start again, consistently remaining lit for longer than the others? That would have been the sign that he's back. Yet again, God didn't do that. He chose the much more dramatic, full seven branches, all 8 days, miracle of the Nes Pach Shemen. Why? I would argue, and there's a Rashi that indicates that this might in fact be the case, that the sign was that it's not just that God is coming back to the Beis HaMikdash on the diminished intensity level that had previously characterized by Yecheni. I think the fact that God did not simply make the Ner Maravi start happening consistently again, but instead shows this much more dramatic Nesach Shemen, where all seven branches remain lit, and remain lit for 8 days, not just one extra day. Sorry, excuse me. I think was Hashem's way of showing I'm not just coming back to the pre, you know, Hanukkah level of the diminished level of Bayit Sheni, which never lived up to Bayit Rishon. I think this amazingly dramatic miracle, given the context of the time of the Nesach Shemen, was Hashem's way of saying to them, I am coming back in a way that you have never known before. I am now coming back as a result. And again, it makes so much sense. What was the problem before? That there was this passivity, there was this apathy, this lack of caring on the part of Am Yisrael, that they couldn't even do enough to even get themselves up and go. Now, oh, thank you so much. Hold on one second. Thank you. Again, that was the problem, and that's why it seems that the Shekhinah was never there on the level of Bayit Rishon. But now the Hashmonaim have come and have shown unbelievable passion and commitment. And therefore, God makes this miracle of the Nesach Shemen, and I think it was God's sign, that not only is he back, but he's back in a way that he has never even been there before, and he's back in a much more intense way in the second Beis HaMikdash. And now that we understand that, now we can understand why, in fact, Chazal would make this Nesach Shemen the centerpiece of this amazing eight-day festival every single year. Because this was an amazing sign that wasn't just about the miracle. Again, the miracle itself was not all that amazing. Again, Shemesh B'Givon Dom, I think, is way more significant, the fact that the sun stood still. However, the meaning and the message behind this miracle was unbelievable. The sign and the message behind it was that Hashem is coming back to Am Yisrael, and even coming back in a level that they had not known for several hundred years. And now we can understand why, in fact, it was so, so important and so significant. In fact, though, I would even push it one step further. Because, going back to, again, the idea that we developed in the beginning, the central theme of Hanukkah, if you remember, transcends even the single events, the one-time events that took place during the time of the Hashmonaim. As we developed at the beginning, it's not just about that one time in history. Hanukkah is really about the broader theme of Chanukat HaBayit Lashem in general. The general idea that, again, all of these mikdashot, the Mishkan and the foundation of Bayit Sheni and everything like that, that all took place at this time. And therefore, I think that what's really going on behind this miracle and why Chazal would decide to make a holiday for it is that if really what we're supposed to be celebrating at this time of Hanukkah is the broad concept of taking a place, taking a house, taking a physical structure and dedicating it to the service of God, what could be the most perfect, what could have possibly been a more ideal symbol for this holiday than the Nesach Shemen? Because again, the essence of a mikdash is the presence of the Shekhinah. What is the Nesach Shemen all about? The whole message of the Nesach Shemen is God's Shekhinah is returning. And therefore, if again, if really the broader message of the entire time period of the end of Kislev is this notion of consecrating physical structures to be for Avodat Hashem, this idea of Chanukat HaBayit Lashem, then of course the Nesach Shemen is literally the most perfect vehicle for expressing that message. Because the Nesach Shemen is what a mikdash is all about. It's about the presence of the Shekhinah and the Shekhinah coming to be with us. And that is the message that was expressed by the Nesach Shemen. And therefore it really makes so much sense that that is really the message that we're supposed to be thinking about on Hanukkah, is this broad message of Chanukat HaBayit Lashem encapsulated by the Nesach Shemen that's all about the Shekhinah showing, I'm happy with what you have done, and in fact I'm going to send my Shekhinah to come and live with you. The problem though for us is, what do we do though, now that we live in a time that's post-Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Mishkan, we don't have a place that we can sort of point to and say, this is the place that's the Makom HaShekhinah, this is the place where the Shekhinah is present. What does that mean for us then when we come to celebrate Hanukkah? If the whole notion of Hanukkah is, again, is this broad concept of Chanukat HaBayit Lashem, is the concept of celebrating and sanctifying a Mikdash and recognizing the Nesach Shemen and the presence of the Shekhinah there, so what do you and I do now that we're lighting? Instead, again, really Hanukkah is supposed to be about lighting the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash and dedicating the Beis HaMikdash. So we have our like small little Chanukiyot that we light in the windows of our homes. So what does all of this mean to us? What I would argue is that the fact that we light in our homes is actually exactly the point. Because what's amazing is that we don't just happen to light in our homes because, well, what are we going to do? Like, there's no Beis HaMikdash, where else are we going to light? It's not that way at all. There is an inextricable link an unbreakable link between our homes and the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah that is not present by any other mitzvah. Think about it, right? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but you probably are, right? When it comes to Ner Chanukah, by most other mitzvot, you can do it anywhere, right? Again, there might be ideal, say, to shaking lulav and etrog in shul or in your sukkah or something like that. But if you want to shake it at home, shake it at home. If you happen to be on your train on your way to work, you could shake it on the train on your way to work, right? Most mitzvot, again, there may be more or less ideal places to do them, but theoretically, you can do them anywhere. When it comes to Ner Chanukah, it is very unique. Ner Chanukah is not like that. Ner Chanukah must be fulfilled in your home. In fact, there's a minhag in general that we light every night. Also, again, I don't know how many of you make it to Maariv, but in fact, we light the menorah in shul as well. That is not the mitzvah, though. And in fact, there's even a machloket whether the bracha could be made on that lighting in shul, because it is very clear that you cannot fulfill your mitzvah through the lighting in shul, because it's not your house. And even a man who does light in shul, even if he's the one who lit for the shul, he would still have to go home and light at home, because you can only fulfill the mitzvah in your home. And what I was referring to before is, of course, this sometimes leads to complications, even ironically, with Hanukkah parties, right? Very often you have a Hanukkah party, and of course you light the menorah at the Hanukkah party, but ironically, you can't really fulfill your mitzvah of lighting at the Hanukkah party. You have to still go home and light at home. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah must be fulfilled in your home. And again, there's even a machloket whether you can make the bracha on those things. I know, again, in Maya Note, we always have a Hanukkah banquet. We do, of course, light there. But again, we always tell the students, you must make sure to go home and light at home again. The only reason why, in fact, we end up asking that you are allowed to make a bracha on those lightings is because of Pirsumei Nisa, that there's such a notion of publicizing the miracle that we say you can make the bracha. But again, the mitzvah itself can only be fulfilled at home. And this is quite unique to Ner Chanukah, that we have this notion that you must make sure to do it at home. And what's interesting is we see this again in a number of ways. The very formulation of the mitzvah itself highlights this connection between the candle and the home. The way that the Gemara expresses it, if you look in source number 13, it explicitly says the basic obligation of Ner Chanukah is mitzvah Chanukah ner ish ubeito. The mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the formulation is a man and his house. Now, literally what that means is that the basic obligation of lighting a Hanukkah candle is that you only need, really, to fulfill your obligation, one candle for the entire household each night of Hanukkah. But again, the formulation is so striking. Ner ish ubeito, like a candle for a man and his house. It's a very striking language. And what's interesting is that the very fact that that is the obligation, again, you could fulfill your mitzvah of Hanukkah, even though in general that's not the way that we do. We do usually have everybody light, and we light more than one each night and everything like that. But theoretically, on every single night of Hanukkah, all that would have to happen is one member of the household would just have to light one candle. The reason this is so surprising is that this shouldn't work. Meaning, we're familiar sort of with the idea that one person can often do a mitzvah on behalf of other people. However, that only works for mitzvot of speech. For example, when it comes to Kiddush or Havdalah, right, or something like that, right, your husband or the rabbi in shul or whatever it is can make Kiddush or Havdalah and be motzi. You can fulfill your obligation. The reason for that is because of a unique principle called shomea ke'one. If you hear it, it's as if you said it. When it comes, however, to mitzvot of action, this never works. I can't send somebody to shake a lulav for me while I just sit at home and do nothing. Of course that wouldn't work. So too, right? I can't send somebody else to sit in the sukkah for me and I'll just be yotzei. By all mitzvot of actions, that does not work. You cannot send somebody else to go do the action for you while you just sit lazily at home and fulfill your obligation. So how can it possibly be that when it comes to the mitzvah of Hanukkah, the basic obligation is one member of the household lights one candle, and that's it. Everybody else is done with their obligation. How could that be? This is a mitzvah of action. You have to light the candle. What emerges from this halacha, and many Rishonim talk about this. I even brought it for you one example. I brought for you the Pnei Yehoshua in Source 14. Many Rishonim and Achronim argue that the mitzvah of Chanukah is very unique and that it's not like most other mitzvot. What they basically say is that instead of being what's called a chovah haguf, a mitzvah which is incumbent upon each and every Jew, it might actually be that the mitzvah of Chanukah candles is what's called a chovah habayit. It might actually be that the obligation, so to speak, is on the house. The most close parallel to this is the mitzvah of mezuzah, right? You and I, theoretically, if you never owned a house, you would never have an obligation to put up a mezuzah, meaning there's no obligation upon any specific individual Jew that you must put up a mezuzah. If you have a house, a Jewish home must have a mezuzah on it. So too, say many of the Rishonim and Acharonim, the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah may not be, in fact, an obligation upon each and every single individual Jew to light a Hanukkah candle. It might actually be an obligation upon a Jewish home, that a Jewish home must have a menorah lit in it, which would be why it would then make sense that one member of the household could light one candle and everybody else is done, because the house now has a menorah lit in it. This, really, I think more than anything else, highlights the amazing connection between our homes and the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. Because what this would show is that it's not even simply that in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you must do it in your home. No, your home itself is what generates the obligation. I mean, there can be no more close link than that, the mitzvah itself is actually on the home, that a Jewish home must have a menorah lit in it. Now we can then take that and connect that back to what we were saying before. If, in fact, the entire theme of Hanukkah is really this broad concept of Chanukat HaBayit LaHashem, of taking a physical structure and dedicating and devoting it to being, this is a place that is dedicated to Avodat Hashem. And that is the message of the Neis Pach Shemen. The Neis Pach Shemen is the sign that the Makom HaMikdash has become a Makom HaShchina, that God has accepted and has moved to Shchina, and that's the symbolism of the Neis Pach Shemen. Then when we, during all 8 nights of Hanukkah, light a menorah in our homes and reenact this mitzvah, this miracle of the Neis Pach Shemen in our own homes, and again, it has to be in our own homes, the message that so powerfully comes out is that the message that we're supposed to be inculcating into ourselves through this celebrating the holiday of Hanukkah is performing a Chanukat HaBayit LaHashem on our own homes, of basically saying we are going to dedicate our houses to be a place of Avodat Hashem. That when those flames are burning in our windows, they're supposed to be broadcasting not just, oh, remember how way back when there was one time this miracle of the Chashmona'im. No, the message that's supposed to be broadcasted through those flames that are burning in our windows is, this is a Makom HaShchina. This house is a Mikdash Me'at. This house is a place that is a place devoted to Avodat Hashem. And that is really the message and the theme, because again, that is what the end of Kislev is a time for. The end of Kislev is this time that has this unique power for being a time for Chanukat HaBayit LaShem. And as we light our menorahs and the Neis Pach Shemen, the whole message of that the Shechina is present here, that's what the Ner Maravi meant. That's what the Neis Pach Shemen meant, is that the Shechina is here. So as we light our menorahs in our homes, and it, again, it has to be in our homes, that is supposed to be the message that we're broadcasting to others and even inculcating into ourselves. And what's amazing is that, considering the fact that, again, as we've mentioned, there were actually many dedications of houses to God that took place at this time, why is it, to a certain extent we can ask, why was the one, again, there were three of them, why was the Chanukat HaShmona'i the one that was really made the centerpiece of Hanukkah? And I would really argue that, again, we saw, as we mentioned, that through many different things, we do make reference to many of the other ones, again, through Mizmor Shir Chanukat HaBayit LaDavid, through the Kriyas HaTorah. In many ways, we do, in fact, make reference to the others. But clearly, lighting the menorah is because of Chanukat HaShmona'i. Why is that the one that we really highlight as we celebrate Hanukkah? And I think that the reason might be, going back to that time, I would really say that of the three, again, of the Mishkan, of the foundation for Bayit Sheni being laid, and of the rededication of Bayit Sheni, all of which took place at this time, theirs seemed the most hopeless. The Shechina had never been there on the level that it had been in Bayit Rishon. Not only that, but again, in the years leading up to the miracle, the Shechina was gone altogether. The Jews were assimilating. There were idols in the Beis HaMikdash. The situation must have literally seemed completely hopeless. And despite the fact that it seemed hopeless, the Chashmona'im said, we are going to take a stand. We refuse to give up. We refuse to live a life that is devoid of Torah and mitzvot. Not only that, but even going back to a point that I raised at the very outset, that there's this notion of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, and that in fact they probably could have even lit the menorah with Tameh oil, but even that they refused. Rav Rosenzweig actually develops this idea that part of what's going on in Hanukkah is this notion of, we want to live as Lichatchila Jews. We don't want to use shortcuts, even though yes, we could have used Tameh oil, said the Chashmona'im. No, we are going to take a stand. We want to keep Torah and mitzvot, and not only do we want to keep them, and not only are we willing to risk our lives to keep them, but we insist upon keeping them in the most ideal way possible. We want to use tahor oil, not the tameh oil, even if technically it would be mutter. And what's amazing is that really that is the number one of the dedications, even though there were several. That's the one that we focus on. Why? Because that is really the message. It may seem hopeless. You know, it might seem as if my house being a mukamashlina, I mean, come on, right? But even though, again, think about their times. It also seemed hopeless, but it didn't matter. They said, I don't care. I'm going to take a stand that this matters to me. This is worth fighting for. And they were ultimately successful. And if you think back then to what we do, even though, as we just saw in the Gemara, the basic obligation of Ner Chanukah is really you could have just one member lighting and being motzi everybody else through just one candle every night. But that's not how anybody keeps Hanukkah. We do Mahadrin, and we even do Mahadrin Mincha Mahadrin, which means the best and the best of the best. Then instead of just having one person light one candle, everybody lights. And not only does everybody light, we light one the first night, and then we increase, and two the second, and three the third, and we keep on increasing. Which says the Gemara is like the best way to do it, and even like better. It's like the most lechatchila way to do it. And I think that the message that we're trying to do by lighting our menorahs in this Mahadrin Mincha Mahadrin way, this best of the best way, is that we are reenacting exactly what the Chashmonaim did when they said Torah and Mitzvot is worth it. And not only is it worth it, but like we insist upon doing it in the best way. This is what we are. This is our passion. This is what we're committed to. We don't just want to get by. We want to make sure that we can live our lives as Lechatchila Jews, fully committed and having the Neis Pach Shemen happen and showing that God accepts it and in fact brings his Shechina. And therefore, as we come to the holiday of Hanukkah, and we're lighting our menorahs in our homes, in our windows, every night of Hanukkah, and again, and we're all of us lighting, and we're lighting in increasing numbers with each night, I think that we're really supposed to be inculcating this message of this entire time period of the end of Kislev is a time that has a special koach for dedicating Mikdashot to Hashem. Again, the Mishkan was completed now by Cheney, the foundation was laid now, the Hanukkah Chashmonai happened now. And as we light our menorahs in our own windows, we should be performing Hanukkah Habayit LaHashem in our own homes, and that should be the additional dedication that's also going on. And as our candles are burning, it should be as if the Neis Pach Shemen is happening in our own homes, broadcasting that message of this is a place where the Shechina is present. Thank you.